I am very privileged today to be joined by Nicholas Babin. If you don't know who he is, I suggest you Google him. No, I'm kidding. He's not that facetious. He's not that arrogant. Nicholas Babin, though, is a very interesting chap. He's an EU digital ambassador, and he actually launched the Talking Dog, which was Aibo, which was the first AI robot for Sony, and he did that in Europe back in the day. And I remember seeing him on the ITV news, I think, to be fair. But really, it's quite an interesting, exciting episode that we're doing today, because I just merged a couple of podcast shows together because I was realizing I was just spread too thin, to be honest. And so today we're actually here to talk about the global a global perspective on focusing on economics, politics, social constructs, and technology. So it's where are we, where are we heading, and where are we going to end up? And I just laid a really interesting thought onto Nicholas about data centers and things like this, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But it's quite an exciting time right now, Nicholas, isn't it? But it's also one of fear by a lot of people, because there's a lot of more sort of mass surveillance, and there's a lot more censorship. We have a lot of problems now, but I'm quite hopeful, really, in the future. What do you sort of think right now is going on?
It's hard to say, to be frank with you, because you've just announced me some news that I was not expecting. You know, I don't watch much news because I'm really focusing on what's important in my life these days. You'll see when you get older. What happens. But it's an exciting time, I would say, at least in terms of technology, in terms of what we see with the world, because the world is becoming so small. I mean, literally now, you know, anything happening, you have real time all across the world, like about the typhoon in China and Taiwan. You just see images that have just happened and things like that. Was, you know, in the past and not that long ago, you would have the news 48 hours later, even 24 hours later. Now we have it, everything is real time. We have a speed of, you just mentioned the fact that now you have in Croatia fiber, and that your connections is just fabulous.
Well, it's incredible, really, because there's sorry to interrupt. There's like an internet project, a rural internet project. So the telcos don't want to know if you don't have a connection. They don't do fiber. They're like, no, we're not doing fiber. So I was like, come on, my neighbor has fiber. Why aren't you giving me fiber? And my neighbor said, don't worry. She said, just call this company, yeah? And I was like, oh, I'm not calling them. So I just sent them an email, this company, and they install fiber as a rural project. And literally within 1 week, I've got the fiber cable. Within 2 more weeks, straight in. But what, I'm quite paranoid, right? So I'm actually retaining my Starlink connection in the case that something untoward happens, is how I'm going to describe it. Yeah. I've actually make sure I keep a couple of batteries charged. I've got two big batteries that are charged because we get power cuts here. So I think it's very important in this day and age to actually be aware that, you know, having food in your cupboards that will last you a week, having these kind of things, having a torch, knowing where your passport is, knowing, you know, having some cash on hand, making sure that, you know what you're going to take. Yeah? Yeah. I mean, the EU said about 6 months ago, they said you must have a bag ready so that if it goes down, you can go somewhere. Right. The UK said that about a month ago. And I think it should have probably been the other way around, frankly, if I'm brutally honest. But I think we're at an interesting time right now. In
that's exactly what I was saying. You're right.
Sorry.
That's exactly to my point. Very interesting time. And well, hopefully, you know, things will go well. But At least we have the environment to make it a fantastic world. Let's just make sure that at least the people who govern us understand it and make the right decisions. That's all we see.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, yes, the world is in turmoil. However, there are many, many people that actually agree. Like, you know, you don't have to be hard right. You don't have to be hard left. And there's a bigger majority now that are realizing where these kind of locations actually are. It's like, hold on, I'm not far right. I'm just a normal person. It's kind of people are really understanding that more now. But the problem is that they don't understand how they can be triggered. And this triggering of people's emotions and sharing fake news is a really big one. And, you know, on X, when I see something, because I engage in a lot of political conversations, you know, don't shoot me for it, but shoot me down for it. But it's important to fact check. So whenever I see something that triggers me, I try to fact check. Obviously, sometimes I might be triggered completely. We've got a halal meat scandal in the UK at the moment, where basically a lot of universities have been serving halal meat to students, right, without telling them. And the supermarkets have been selling halal meat. Nobody knows if they're buying meat that's halal, if they're buying meat that's not halal. So there's this whole sort of news wave, I'm going to call it, because I don't actually know if it's completely true or not. Certainly some of it is, but I use Grok to check and fact check this information. And that I find particularly useful, because what you find is a lot of these politicians, they are spreading fake news on purpose because they have a narrative that sits behind it that they want to push. And that frightens me, Nicholas, if I'm brutally honest.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, I use several sources, to be frank. So at least I'm trying to be as open-minded as possible. And rather than, because you think that, you know, Grok could be also mistaught, because, as you know, it's all about pre-trained algorithms. And you have no idea what it's how they are trained. So what I do is I use, you know, Claude, I use Gemini, I use obviously ChatGPT, I use Mistral, the French AI system, and I try to anytime any source, anything I see now, this is something that has changed tremendously in the last year, pretty much. But any information that I find, even if I would agree to it, I check whether or not it's true.
Wow.
So I think it's time consuming. And that's why I don't watch the news anymore, because I have no idea if it's true or not.
Right. Right. Well, a lot of it isn't, is it? I mean, it's extremely biased. I mean, look at the BBC. The BBC used to be a wonderful, non-biased organization, right? But it needs defunding. And it is basically a tax on people. The money's being spent in the wrong places. You've got Children in Need. So get a load of this. Children in Need, from what I read the other day, have actually spent £440,000 defending illegal immigrants' court costs, right? And I think in the UK, right? And this money, originally, when we were at school, we went and we raised money and we bought the Red Noses. You remember the Red Noses?
I remember that. Yes, absolutely. Right.
So a lot of money is being siphoned off into things that are unethical to the masses, right? And I think that information, we're in the information wars. I mean, there's a podcast, isn't there, that there's this crazy American right-wing guy, you know, hardcore guy. He's got information wars, and he talks a lot about these sort of conspiracy things. And I think the problem is confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is a massive thing, and it becomes worse and worse with AI because it's an ecosystem, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That just continues. And I'm quite I'm quite upbeat, but I'm also quite real as to, how do I put this politely, the intelligence of people is affected by their emotions. And I've even caught myself sharing a post or commenting on a post, and someone said, "You're wrong. What are you talking about?" And I was like, and I immediately replied with, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I was triggered. I should have fact checked it," you know. And so that's why it's very, very easy, I think, to actually get in trouble with the police, is what's happening in the UK, which is draconian, I think, in many ways. People can't share their opinions. There's a huge bias as to what is going on over there. It's very worrying. It's good to not be there. It's good to be a US citizen, to be honest, because they may go to bat for me if I say something dumb. You know, it's preposterous, really, the whole thing. And what is interesting is the way that the media are more in bed with the government than they used to be, or at least we know that they are. Perhaps back then we were naive and we didn't really realize, I think, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I can't comment on that because I have no idea what's going on in the UK. I'll be there on Monday, so I'll tell you what's going on.
I'm sure it'll be wonderful, Nicholas. You're a very diplomatic character for sure. But we talked a little bit about this crazy idea that I came across, and I was pondering this idea because so get a load of this. The idea is this. The idea is Elon Musk, he has space travel, he has robots, he has data centers, he has AI models, and he has Starlink, right? Which is phenomenal. So if you take a little bit of time and put all these building blocks together, what you have is you have offsite storage, AI capabilities, and you have cooling potential for vast amounts of data, which could be off the planet, right? Which would be just fantastic, because it will redefine the cost basis for technology. And I forget how much money is spent on cooling, but it is absolutely huge. And I have MIT Technology Review here, of course, Nicholas. And what is interesting is that the energy usage is actually split between heating, data centers, cooling, and appliances, electric transport industry, and other. So all of this hoo-ha, right? Yeah. You can see that there. All of this hoo-ha about data centers, actually, developing economies are far more juicy when it comes to electricity than data centers, which is interesting.
Yep. No, absolutely. And what's interesting is, I mean, I had read something about that as well. A single LLM model on training run can use as much electricity, and I had done fact-checking on this one, and I know it's true, can run as much electricity as 1,000 US homes in a year. I mean, that's wow. That's massive.
Wow.
But really, the interesting thing here is that AI and energy, to me, are very tightly linked in both directions. The first one is obviously the energy appetite that AI has in terms of, as you just mentioned, you know, electricity consumption and water for cooling, and AI adoption basically scales around data centers. Represents, I think, if I'm not mistaken, but don't take my word for this one, is between 8% and 10% of global electricity demand by 2030. That's what I had read on one of the
I think that European might be about right.
Report. And what's interesting, so on one side you have the AI energy appetite, but on the other side you have AI for energy efficiency, and that's what I really like, because it's basically this duality of how can I put it? AI as a strain on energy system and a solution to energy transition. See what I mean? So it's energy efficiency. You can use AI as an optimizer for smart grids, demand forecasting, cooling optimization, renewables. So to me, if you link the future AI and energy transition, you can accelerate the global transition because you will, for example, optimize electric vehicle charging networks. You can manage hydrogen supply chains. You can enable predictive maintenance. So the same technology driving energy demand may still be the key to solving the energy crisis. And that's the paradox. And that's why I think it's a very important point. And what you mentioned very disruptively is what Elon Musk said. So what about having data centers on the moon or on Mars?
I'm not sure he said that.
I thought you said that.
It was a Facebook post that I saw. And I read this post and I was like, well, hold on a minute. That just makes so much sense because I have a Starlink, which I use for emergencies, like I said, right? And I truly believe that, you know, you can still transfer a lot of data up to the cloud. There are better receivers because I only have like a basic home one, right? But there are better receivers. And even if it isn't used on a day-to-day for speedy operations, you've mm-hmm. got, you know, you've got your device here, right? You've got your computer, you've got localized storage, which could be in your car, as an example. You could have a data center in your car for your own personal use. You could, you know, that car can be your battery, right? So you can have your solar power that comes from the sun. It goes into your car, it charges your car, then your car discharges into your house. This is a big thing already, right? But the data center piece is interesting purely because it restructures the cost base, doesn't it? It restructures the entire costs. So it's like, okay, Oracle, you're building all this stuff, but your cooling is costing 95% of the operating of that data center, right? Yeah. So it's not going to, I don't think it's going to wipe out the competitors. But what I do think is that it's going to redefine, it's like edge computing redefined computing, right? Having more power on your laptop, on your phone that can do AI tasks, right? So all of these things are going to be split into more interesting networking solutions is probably how I can see it. I mean, my sister explained about edge computing to me. Wow, 6 years ago, when I went to visit her in San Francisco, when I went to Oracle Open World, And at the time, I had no idea what she was talking about until I actually listened to what she said a bit more carefully and then thought about it a bit more because she used to work at Intel, right?
Yeah, I remember.
So all this stuff is kind of within our grasp, isn't it, right now? But the problem is that we've got all of these risks globally, all these conflicts that basically need to close them out, right? Then we need to have peace. And unfortunately, this, in my opinion, and the destruction of society as we know it, they are the most dangerous threats that we have to a sort of utopian society, in my opinion.
That's possible. Yeah. I mean, it's you're right, and it's too bad because again, we have the environment to make a peaceful world, and we have the environment to make a much smaller world than it has ever been. We have the infrastructure, we have the environment, we have the mindsets, but. You know, unfortunately, in some areas of the world, people are different. And I guess the difference makes us richer in the sense that, you know, opinions from all sides are good to, as you said, I'm very diplomatic and it's true. Yeah. But I always respect everyone. So, whatever opinions can be brought to me, I will listen. I will make up my own mind, but I will learn from it. And that's what I think is important. And again, the technology is around to help us do that in a much in an optimized way.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, in terms of 3D printing, I've got this 3D printer over there. I don't know if you've seen that. Yeah, but
I remember.
Some people might not know. They might not know what that is. But my friend Eric gave that to me, and 3D printing is an interesting one, right? Because I don't think we've really actually hit the opportunities yet with 3D printing.
I totally agree with you.
You do, yeah. On a localized level, you know, there could be so. I think once you put together the large language model search capabilities with the 3D printing libraries, right, and then you connect that with IKEA, yeah, that or some sort of store.
Exactly, I was going to say as an right? example. Yeah,
it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? Because then everything becomes, oh well, I don't buy that from IKEA. I just buy the other bits, and then when I need to put my furniture together or fix my furniture, because I do believe we're going to start fixing things more. You're gonna get that roll. You see, there's a roll on the top there. Anyone's watching this, that's a roll of plastic. And then you literally, I mean, I'm on old technology here. So I have one of these, right?
Oh, wow.
So I can't use it on this computer. I have to use it on an old computer. But all you do with this 3D printer is you put your design on here, plug it in, turn it on, and it works. I mean, Eric's an engineer, so he fixed that for me. He gave it to me. But
I'm not going to try to sell my book, but the book I published in 2021, The Talking Dog, has a whole chapter about 3D printing.
I know you're into 3D printing.
Ask your dad.
My dad loved your book.
I know.
He absolutely loved your book. Bless him. There's a lot of excitement really at the moment in my mind about the future. I am very excited about it. I think in July, August issue of the MIT Technology Review, it had a thing about, are we ready for AI agents? I mean, AI agents is a big topic, right? It's a huge topic.
Huge.
I personally don't need to mess around with a lot of AI agents because I have optimized everything else. And actually, I like to deal with things myself because I want to do some work, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what people probably will find in the coming few years. They're going to have to redefine everything work-wise because it's all changing. And they've got all these business cases for these AI agents. But it's like, when I think of an AI agent, all I'm thinking of right now is, okay, so I went to Spotify when I changed my RSS feed, okay? I went to Spotify and I typed them a help message and they said, oh, okay, what is your query about? Da, da, da. And so I said, okay, I've changed my RSS feed. It's not showing here. I've got duplicate show there, blah, 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 blah. They said, okay, no problem. An agent, a real agent, was online with me within 1 to 2 minutes. So I truly believe that we have the capabilities to make people's lives better with these things. But it doesn't mean people are going to be removed from the chain. It just means there are less people doing that job of, hello, Mr. Jones, how can I help you with your bank, with your account, with your whatever it is, doesn't matter.
Plumbing issue. Anything.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. But those chatbots, that's what we're talking about. That's an AI agent, right? It's a chat. It's an AI agent, yeah? And there are many examples.
It's beyond chatbot. It's much better than a chatbot, an AI agent. Because
it's still a chatbot though, right?
I would say it's beyond chatbot because they can perceive, they can reason, and they can act autonomously. Within a defined environment, obviously.
Agreed. But you still need someone to look at the responses, to add in some extra steps, some extra questions that then redefine that entire process. So it's like, okay, I went and I spoke to them. What's slowly happening is the customer service representatives are getting faster.
Yeah.
And they're becoming better because they have more information that is being extracted from the person on the other end of the chat, right? And that's exciting because it's reducing time waste and it's reducing grief.
And because it augments you. It augments humans. That's the basis of AI from the beginning. When we launched back in 1999, I've told you the story 100 times, but you know, it was about augmented. And that's exactly it. We're not in the business of replacing people. We're in the business of augmenting them and making sure that all the mundane tasks that people don't want to do, you know, again, a very good friend of mine, one of my closest friends, he's a lawyer. One thing he doesn't like is write contracts. Well, AI is there. AI normally would take him 2 days, 2-3 days to write the contract. With AI, he has it in less than an hour. And then he spends half a day correcting what AI has produced for him. And so the whole process went from 3 days to barely a day. And he's happy because he doesn't have any more in really to write what he doesn't like writing. So that's the image I always give to people. It's like, it's all about human augmented. So he has more time to go to court and actually argue with the judge in order to get his point across. And that's exactly it.
Yeah. It's actually really, really quite exciting, this whole world. The main thing I think at the moment is actually the addiction of endorphins, the addiction of people's brains to the notifications and the replies, but also the colors. The colors on your mobile phone. You know, I just updated my iPhone, and for some reason, I feel that it is less addictive, weirdly enough. And I don't know why that is. Maybe I've consciously made it less addictive because I've removed myself from using it.
Yeah,
that could be it. But I've been playing around with techniques to reduce usage, and that includes grayscale. I think I told you that before. I turned it on to grayscale for four and a half days. It was really, really weird in the beginning because you're not getting the colors that you're used to. So your brain is like, pardon?
The stimulation, you're not getting the same stimulation, or you're not as stimulated as we are. Yeah, you're absolutely right. No, it makes a big difference. I mean, you know, I've been working on gamification for many, 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 many years. And that's a little bit coming from the gamification techniques where we use colors, we use game mechanics, we use words, you know, in order to gain engagement. And that's exactly what's going on with the same story. I mean, in games, PlayStation, you know, from the PlayStation 1 to now the PlayStation 5, that's exactly what it's all about. It's all about colors. It's all about actions, typical type of actions, typical type of design. And that's what makes the whole difference. And I agree with you, you know, that we need to be less stimulated.
The problem exists is control. It's a lack of control,
losing control.
And I do think that we are responsible for ourselves. We should not outsource the responsibility of our tech addiction to the tech providers. They are providing a service. We are willingly buying their service. We are willingly using their applications, right? We are giving our attention to these things. And actually, there are many, many ways that you can regain your time, your concentration, your health, you know, and a lot of those are actually doing things in the real world. Like the other day, I was just like, I was literally messed right up because I've been on my phone way too much and I was really stressed about something. I forget what was stressing me out. And I went outside, I started just digging a hole. I just moved some dirt, right? And you know, took some dead ivy off my building. Yeah. And it's like these things that originally we probably would have hired someone to do, we need to start doing more of ourselves and learning more. And that really excites me, because actually, you know, you're big into using AI models for your DIY stuff as well, aren't you? Right. And we talked about this before. And so I designed a podcast studio for my basement, right? And you saw the image that I posted the other day.
Yeah.
Right. With the motorbike and the Ferrari pictures and Steve on the sofa and stuff. And so I'm designing my future, right? Instead of going to Pinterest and looking at Pinterest, what other people want, what I did is I basically created something that I wanted. And then I went to Canva, which is another design program, and I manipulated it all, moved things around, messed around with it. And then I took it back to Gemini and I said, what would you change? And Gemini said, well, the lighting isn't right. It's far too displaced, the lighting. And I was like, nah. And I took a look at it and I was like, I'm not messing with that. The lighting's amazing. But the point I'm trying to make is, for house renovations, if you're trying to brief your designer or your builder, right, you basically have saved yourself unclear communication that could occur. You've saved yourself the miscommunication that could happen by giving them something. You say, look, this is what I want my patio to look like. I want these slabs. I know they cost X amount of money, and I know you cost X amount of money. This is the surface area, which you can measure on your phone. You go out there, you measure it. You can measure the level. You can use it as a level. It is, the mobile phone has killed so many different items. It is unbelievable if you think about it.
Yeah. I know. I was part of that revolution, or evolution, if you want to call it, because when we were with Sony Ericsson, when I was at Sony, and I had many, many meetings with the Ericsson engineers and the Sony engineers, and putting all these together and realizing that actually we had a handheld computer.
It's fascinating when you look back at the technology. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, but my dad
older
was
than
one
me.
Of the first.
I'm younger than you.
Sorry, I'm a little bit younger than you. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I don't know what I was thinking there, Nicholas. I was just thinking back. My brain was thinking back to when I was a kid, and my father had an Apple IIc computer, right?
Which was the
first. It was. What's that?
I used to sell those in computer land in Santa Barbara, California.
Wow.
Well, back in the days.
Wow. So he had the one with the mobile battery. And the mobile battery would weigh 10 kilos or something. It was ridiculous. And I just remember him, he bolted on this mobile screen. Because back then it wasn't color. There wasn't a color screen. He bolted on this sort of screen that was sort of orange and green, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing a game on the train when we were going to Waterloo for an hour. And I played this game on this mobile, and it was just quite bizarre that we've gone from that. And the computer that my dad used to have, which was an Osborne, which was, I think, the first ever portable computer, right? Yeah. We've gone from that to where we are now, which is, you know, you've got more computing power on your mobile phone than a mainframe computer that was existing in the 1960s and 70s and 80s even.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. The whole thing is quite bizarre. But I am feeling positive about it. I'm hoping that if you're still listening to this, you take more time to think before you post things. You fact check things like Nicholas suggested. And just try and be understanding of people. Not everyone has the same opinion as you, and you don't
respect.
Need.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Respect. This is exactly right. And you can differ in your opinion. I have a friend who completely disagrees with me on so much stuff. And we just decided, you know what? We're not talking about these topics. And this is something you can do if you want to hang on to your friendships with these people, yeah, with your friends. But life is there. Life is exciting. And I think the next 6 months are going to be even more exciting. And I know you're going to go and do a talk at Lloyd's. I think it's next Tuesday. Week.
Tuesday. Right.
So this show is recorded. This will be live, let me see, next Thursday. So you will have done your talk by then. And I'm sure you will do extremely well because you always do, Nicholas. And it's always a pleasure to have Nicholas on the show here. He's very supportive. We've done many, many podcasts. And if you want to go check them out, give us a shout if you get lost. We're moving things around at the moment. So if you want access to all of our content, you need to go to mondayinfluencer.com. You can sign up there. And if you want to subscribe to this channel, we would appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much, Nat.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.